I'm a recovering alcoholic addict, and my name is Bill.
Hey, hi, Bill.
And my next birthday, I'll be 70 years old. And this time around, I've been clean and sober for 7 years. I came into AA in 1985. But it wasn't the first time I came into AA. I was exposed to AA in the Douglas Hospital in 1967-68. And then again at Spirit in 1972-73. And if I read how it works with the 12 steps, it didn't apply to me. I started drinking seriously when I was 15. I might have started earlier. I know my grandfather, who lived at home, would feed me beer when I was 7 or 8. And my dad was into gin and Pepsi every night, and I'd want a taste of that. And when I go off to their friends, when they go visiting their friends, I'd be sitting in the corner, and when they go up to sit at the table, I'd polish off the leftover drinks. So when I was 15, I started drinking seriously. I started hanging with some of the guys in school. We were going to the tavern in Billstown Road there and on a Friday night and chug-a-lugging till midnight, and then we'd go down to the clubs. I wanted to play music. I wanted to play the drums, and I'd go down to a club on Notre Dame Street called the Chanticleer and talk up the musicians down there. I remember in grade 11, we went to New York to see the United Nations, and we checked into the hotel. It was a Friday night, I guess, and I got so drunk I didn't get out of the hotel room that night. I was draped around the toilet bowl, and I did get out the next day to visit the United Nations, and then I was off and running. I hit all the jazz clubs, and I wanted to get to Birdland, and I got there and heard Count Basie, and I thought, boy, this is the greatest. And I loved American beer. I could drink a lot of those. And still walking a straight line, I thought. But so coming back on the bus, I'll never forget it. I was just about in tears. The people I was with, I didn't fit in there. I knew I didn't fit in with these people. And coming back, I don't know why I was crying, because I wasn't getting any attention. It was probably the beginning of self-pity that I was into a lot. But I didn't realize that then. I thought maybe I just wanted to stay in New York and drink American beer. But I came back, and I think it was December of 54, I dropped out of high school. I made the decision that morning, told my mother, I'm not going back, and she said, what? Well, you're going to have to get a job. So I did fake a few applications. I did get a job. I worked in the Toronto Dominion Bank on Rachel in St. Lawrence, or St. Dominic, junior clerk there, and have to go down to the main office on St. Jacques and pick up the clearing there, and sometimes it wouldn't be ready, and I'd sit in the tavern and get pretty loaded and go back to work. Of course, couldn't do any work. I wanted to get into the music business. I joined the Musicians Union in 1955, went off to work in Rouen for a few months, and then came back to Montreal and started working around town. The Top Hat was my first steady job. And I was hanging with all the guys that play jazz and smoking pot and popping pills for bitches and amphetamines and looking out for the fuzz, because they were ready to bust your ass as soon as they could catch you. So I worked pretty steady. I was the new kid on the block, and I was had a good reputation at the time, and I was getting a lot of jobs. And by 1959, I started messing around with heroin, and then I knew I was in trouble. My reputation was going ahead of me. Sometimes I wouldn't cut the job. Sometimes I couldn't cut the rehearsal, and they'd say, Bill, if you don't cut it tonight, you're out of here. So that went on for a while. I remember in 1961, I played a club for about 2 weeks up in Ville Saint-Laurent. It was called Dagwood's. I remember the last night, I was so tore up in the middle of the afternoon, but I went to work anyway. The place was packed. The club was crowded. I screwed up the first show, just a mess, and no coordination, no reflexes, just a mess. And I had two more shows to go, and no one befriended me in that club. I looked around for a sympathetic face or something, and nothing. And I had two more shows to go. I was lucky the president of the union didn't get wind of it, or maybe he did. He could have sued my ass or fired me and or expelled me from the union. But that's the way I was going, and in 62 I went off to Three Rivers to get rid of all the connections in Montreal, and I went there and I was having blackouts, running up a bar tab that was into the next week's salary, and I'd have to go to work and I'd say, what's the worst thing that could happen to me is that they won't serve me at the bar. Well, they were taking my whole salary. Of course they're going to serve me at the bar. I stayed there for a couple of years and came back to Montreal and started working again. And well, things were not going too well. My health was failing, and I was still trying to hang on, thinking the next job will be the one that will straighten me out. In 65, I was working at a place called the Tourbillon out in Pointe-aux-Trembles, 7 nights a week, 3 shows a night. It was a huge place, and I was a mess. I was drinking up and smoking up and not eating. And I went to go to work one night, and I went to brush my teeth with my hairbrush. And I was sitting on my bed and put the tie on. I didn't have a shirt on. I said, God, let something happen here. Let me throw myself down the stairs or get hit by a bus. Something's got to stop this because I can't stop it. And I went to work, and a few days later I took some time off, and I had this terrible pain in my right side, and my mother called the doctor. He had never seen me before, but he made a house call Saturday afternoon and said, you'll have to go to the Queen Elizabeth. They'll take an x-ray and they'll give you a room. Can you get there on your own, or do we call an ambulance? No, my father took me there, and we took a cab, and they took an x-ray and sent me up to this room marked isolation. I said, must be some mistake. He said, no, no mistake. I went in there. They called in a lung surgeon. He punctured the chest wall and said, your lung had collapsed. We're going to try and reinflate it. They took some blood and all and some other tests, and a few days later they told me that I had tuberculosis and that I would probably have the right lung removed. Well, I was in, like I said, isolation, people coming in with hoods on, with covers over their hat, their hair, masks on, covers, a gown on, covers over their shoes. I thought, holy shit, what is this? And the nurse is telling me, don't get paranoid. Well, I was running a fever of 103. I mean, that's, and plus withdrawing from heavy narcotics. And luckily, the doctor came in, and I told him that, and he put me on methadone. I stayed with that doctor for 30 years. When he retired, he gave me 30 years of medical history, and I saw notes there and letters from the narcotic division in Ottawa saying, yes, Bill is known to us, and if you want to treat him, it's okay, it's up to you. And he stuck with me all those years. And I see him from time to time in church. Like I said, he's retired, and I tell him I'll be eternally grateful to you for sticking by me, because most doctors know in the 60s, boy, they call the fuzz on you, and that's your ass. Get out of here. Don't come back. So anyway, I went up to St. Agathe, and as long as I was infectious, we were on the third floor, and they put you out on a balcony in sub-zero weather with plenty of blankets, and you'd breathe in that cold air to help your lungs come back to normal or something. And then when you're no longer infectious, they put you down on the main floor, and you've got ground privileges. And, of course, I was down in the tavern and sitting with the band sometimes and coming back late at night, and they said, Bill, you're still not out of the woods yet, you know, you're in deep trouble. Came back to the chest hospital in 66, and they removed the right lung and sent me home, and I went back to the tavern to figure out what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I was wondering if I was ever going to play again, and I thought, oh yeah, I got to do that. I would get a few gigs, but it wasn't working out, so I went to my doctor. I said, could you get me a room in the Douglas? He said, sure. So he sent me out there. I went out there. They put me on methadone maintenance there. I stayed on that for about 4 years. And I was in and out of there many times for overdoses, suicide attempts, or just plain depression. And there was a recovering alcoholic in there who was the psychiatric nursing assistant. He took me to AA there. And he took me to AA down on Drummond Street, I think it was, on Saturday. No, Friday. And then again in Ville Saint-Laurent on a Saturday, we went to some member's place. After that, this was probably 1968. And we went to some member's place after the meeting, and he said, Bill, why don't you tell us your story? And I said, no way, man. Let me out of here. I'm not going to say a word. So I was, like I said, I was in and out of the Douglas for 3 or 4 years. And they would say to me, Bill, why are you doing this to yourself? And finally they said, Bill, why are you doing this to us? So where was I going to go now? Well, I bummed around for a few years, and in 72 I went to Spirit in the Point. And they said, well, if you really want to get clean and sober. You come down here every day and wash out the toilets, and we'll decide if we have a place for you at our farm in Rawdon. Well, I did that for a week, and I went to Rawdon, and it was tough love there, and it was a heavy work program, and I was didn't like these people at all. They were telling me, Bill, you're going to go out there, and you're going to die. And I said, oh, get away from me. After about 5 weeks, I split, and they called my dad and said, don't let him in the house. He's going to mooch off of you, and he's going to take you down with you, with him. And my dad said, well, I can't. He's my son. I'll have to let him in. Well, you know, they were right. 10 years later, they were right. I had really wiped out the bank account. I was shooting cocaine, just staying in my room and drinking vodka. 8 o'clock in the morning. And, oh, what a mess. What a nightmare. I can't believe I survived that, but that took me to about 82. I started working again. My mother died in 78. There was some money there. I bought another set of drums because I put mine in the pawn shop. I started playing again, and the whole thing was starting all over again. So by 83, 84, my dad was in the nursing home. I sold the house I was living in all my life, and didn't have a cent. I had to go on welfare. And now what was I going to do? That took me up to about 85. I moved into an apartment on Hutchison near Van Horn. It was a third floor walk-up. People would have to take me home, and walking up the stairs, I couldn't make it. And I didn't know what the hell to do. And I thought, well, maybe I'll go back to school. Maybe a manpower will pay my, because I didn't complete high school, they'll pay it. And that would be 8 hours where I wouldn't have to drink. And I thought, holy shit, I know the problem, I called AA. And I did. It was July of 85. And they said, throw the beer down the toilet, get to a meeting. There's a meeting tonight. It was lost and found at Mann's house, but I didn't go that night, and I didn't pour the beer down the drain. A week later, I was with some friends who were playing the jazz festival. I left there and said, I'm going through AA, and they said, bullshit. Well, I did. I got to Mann's house. I remember Sid, the sailor. He gave me a seat by the door. He said, you want to make a quick break for it? You know, you're close to the door. I stayed. I don't know what took place there. I know Ray was there. And I don't know if it was a speaker discussion or what, but I stayed for the meeting. And then I started going to Kimberly over on St. Famille with Social Club, and they had meetings there. And I moved downtown to Hutchison near Sherbrooke, and was in and out of the program, and in and out of food, and trying to do a little of this, a little of that, and nothing was working. I knew that. And an old-timer befriended me, Paul S., and he came and stayed with me till I got into Beaver, and I went into Beaver in May of 86. So while Paul was staying with me, he was sleeping on the floor. He brought little Matt over, and he said, Bill, turn the lights off. Don't smoke. Well, I could not smoke. And turn the radio off, because I always had to have the radio on. And I was sitting there moaning and crying all night, and he'd get up, and I'd say, Paul, oh, shit, man. The past is catching up to me, man. He said, Bill, the past has caught up with you. Give up the program. So I went to Beaver, May of 86, met the famous general there, Joan. I thought I was going to be interviewed by her. They said, if she's not in a good mood, man, she doesn't like what you say, she'll kick you every time you come back when you're ready. I thought, oh boy, this is all I need. Well, Cecil drove me out there along with Paul, and I saw a nurse. She didn't have, it wasn't Joan. And this nurse gave me a room right away, and I was happy to be there, I'll tell you. And I did the 5 weeks there. Joan wasn't that easy, though, I'll tell you. She'd look at me, we'd be in a group, and she'd be asking people, you know, going around in circles. And she'd look at me and she says, what's the matter with you? You're wringing your hands. My hands were dripping wet. And I'm wringing them, and I'm not even talking to you, and look at you. I thought, holy God, this is a bitch, boy. Well, I did the 5 weeks there, and I did the follow-up in NDG with Joan's daughter, and I had a crush on her, I'll tell you. But then I started working again. I started going into a club on Elmer Street. For nothing. They didn't have a drummer on one night, and I said, can I come in and play? And they said, sure. So I started in there, and I did that for a while. And I started playing and working around town again. Things were looking good. I got stayed clean and sober for 5 years at Mundy Central. I was active there and doing the phones and intergroup rep, as it was called then. And Things were looking good. I was still on welfare, working under the table now and then. I had a part-time job baking muffins and croissants at a Van Hoot on Park Avenue for, not for money, just to eat there. That was starting at 6 a.m. Welfare had sent me to French Immersion in St. Henry, I think it was. No, way the hell out east, at west, out by the Mercier Bridge. French Immersion there, playing jazz a couple of nights a week, and my alarm would go off and I wouldn't know where the hell I was going. I'm going to play jazz, go to Big Muffins, what's happening here? I was overworked, just tired out. And they came down with shingles, and it looked like poison ivy, but it hurt like hell. I went to the doctor and he said, it's Zona. We'll give you something for that. Nothing else, you're just going to have to weather it through. It's going to be painful. It was painful. And they gave me Tylenol number 3, I guess it was, or some heavy codeine stuff, and I loved that. But I dropped the baking job. I dropped the French Immersion because I had a good excuse to get out of there. You know, I was sick, and I kept playing jazz. I got rid of the shingles in a couple of weeks, but I was still hooked on painkillers, and I was trying to taper off, and I couldn't do that. And I went to St. Luke in, I guess it was 92. I went to St. Luke detox for 8 days. I met some heavy druggies there, boy, I'll tell you. And I thought everything was kosher there. I thought, wow, these guys don't fool around. They're very professional. Nothing's going to get by them. You can't fool around here. And the night before I was to leave, a couple of guys walked into my room and said, Bill, we know you from the way back. And, and it dropped a whole pile of Librium on the floor. And I thought, how'd they do that? Maybe you'll need something to sleep tonight. I said, no. So I went back to Mundy Central and... wasn't long after that, I drank for a couple of days, and then again for a couple of weeks, and I was in and out from 92 till about 95, 96. I think I took a year around 96, and then 97 I drank for quite a while, and by 98, circumstances led me to drink. That's what I always do. That was my solution, drink and drug, and everything's okay, you know. I didn't take any drugs, but I got bombed on Valium and beer, and I stayed that way, and I went down to about 104 pounds, and I was a mess, and I knew it, and I looked in the mirror one day, I said, I don't have to do this, I know what to do. Well, again, I made arrangements to go to Beaver. This was August of 98. I gave up the cigarettes, I gave up the Valium, I gave up the booze, and went into Beaver on August 19th. Of 98 and did the 5 weeks there. They were a little easier then, you know. I had to do some work, but I was really in bad shape, and I sort of said, hey, I can't do some of this. And they seemed to understand. And I did the follow-up again. That was over on Cavendish, and that was it. I gave up the cigarettes, the booze, the drugs, and everything was falling into place again. And it's been like that. I joined North End English, got active there. Went to the Brewery Mission, got active there, and then just recently at Wednesday noon, active there. And now I thought, well, hey, man, I'm getting old, man. Maybe I'll just back off from service for a bit. I do the phones. My next date is the 30th. When there's five Mondays, I get the fifth one, 9 to 1. And I'll fill in sometimes if they're stuck on a Monday, and that's what I've been doing. I got me a sponsor back in 98. I'd been talking to him before, but now I had to get serious. Had to work on step 4 and step 5 with him, and he sort of waltzed me through it and said, well, Bill, you know, you can't do these things anymore. Wrapped up in self. My whole life was based on self. I was always looking for something outside of myself to fill the hole, you know. And as a kid, I remember, get that football, that baseball, everything's fine. That family down the street, now I like them. Not where I'm living, but down there, it seemed to be happening. Well, I had to get over all that shit. I had to look at myself and say that booze and drugs are not the answer. I know that. And yet I still have that, not a craving, but I've had dreams lately. I've been doing the whole nine yards, and I'm thinking, and I've been reading, that if it comes into the subconscious or in your dreams, you're probably thinking about it. I've thought many times, yeah, a case of Heineken would be nice. And I say, no, because I may never get back to AA. And that's the danger. I don't want to do that anymore. So like I said, I'm going to be 70 in next September. If I'd known I was going to live this long, I think I would have taken better care of myself. I've got cataracts forming on one eye. The right eye is out to lunch. They're going to look at that, probably do some surgery or, you know, I don't know. I've been getting chest pains, started in September, tightness here. Ran to the chest hospital and said, let's look at this. And they took an ECG and x-rays and said, no, there's nothing wrong there. It's probably stress and anxiety or gas acid reflux. When I became 65 in 2001, I got into a government-subsidized building where people are a bit loopy, but so am I. So I fit in there. The concierge is an AA member, and I have to be on my best behavior, or he'll kick my ass out of debt. when I turned 65, the Royal Bank blessed me with a credit card. It turned out to be a burden. Maybe that's why I'm getting the chest pain. Because I put it to the max, and holy shit, here I go again. Off and running, self-will run riot. So this is the best learning process for me. In AA, I'm not cured, and I try to improve my conscious contact. I told you I did step 4 and 5. I've been working on step 9. I've been skimping on that a bit. That's not as good. I have a knack for painting myself into a corner, right? And I do that. It's like the art of self-sabotage. I can do that shit. And I'm learning that, man, don't drink, go to meetings, and listen, and keep an open mind, just like Sean said. So that takes me up today. I'm grateful to be here, and I hope to be here for a while. Thank you.